As a stratagem, that might mean that people have to run out and buy 10 Bird Boys.
Wempway has finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined this evening by Adam Camilleri.
Hello again, welcome to the Tandem Forge the Narrative show. For those of you who made it through my deluge of information last episode.
This We Are the Bellows Holes podcast. So yeah, that's it. Doing a weekly show. Sometimes people get busy and can't make the recording. And, you know, they will be back next week. We'll have everybody reunited pretty soon. But thanks for sticking with just Adam and I.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Appreciate all the support as well, especially in the comments and stuff. It's not always the easiest thing to do doing a two-person show when you've usually got four people to bounce off, and now it goes down to two. But we make two.
Got to take deep breaths.
Or none, for my case.
I wish there was some way that we could translate the opening of that show into binary, because we're going to talk about the Adeptus Mechanicus.
Dude, I don't know how you felt about these guys, but they're one of my favorite model ranges, with one exception. They're just absolutely gorgeous. I love it. I love their fluff. I love their everything. I love AdMech.
Yes. Were you going to qualify that in some way? Or is that just blanket statement?
No, you'll never know.
Yeah. I mean, these, you know, we said it before, these models are stellar. They are everything about 40K in actual physical representation. They're one of the kind of factions that are uniquely Warhammer 40,000 lore. And I played them. I have a full army of these guys. I've already painted.
Well, they're like the Borg meets, you know, religious fever meets, steampunk meets Da Vinci-esque. It's such a crazy mixing pot of different stylistic choices, and the lore is so richly steeped into the models. It's amazing.
What is John Blanche's art that is just...
Yes.
Like, you can't... Absolutely. You look at it, and even if you're just kind of vaguely aware of any of this mythos and lore and stuff, you know exactly what it is. Oh, that's that's the picture of a space marine my older sibling had on their wall or something. You just know exactly what it's from. This is it in plastic form.
Agreed. This is a of a dex. But when I say it's a of a dex, it's a lot of work. I'm just going to put that out there. This thing is complicated and deep and incredibly good.
It's like trying to program the clock on your VCR back in the 80s.
It is. It is.
I'm kidding.
That's perfect. It's perfect.
It's exactly what the AdMech would want. It's
It's not quite as bad as VCR instructions, but this book goes as deep as you want it to go. And I think it's very well structured like that, as in if you want to go full ham and try and squeeze the efficiency out of it, you can do that. Or you can just take a bunch of stuff, chuck it together, and you still have a good time.
I like, so we on the Warhammer community page, we've seen some revisions to the weapons and stuff, and that is, it carries through across the book. Most things have gotten some little form of an upgrade, but it has, like, to your point, it's made lots of things playable, lots of different styles of armies playable. There's, when you're looking at this codex, there's not a linear path to, I think, what's going to make it to a lot of people's tabletops.
Yeah.
You can go and play with the model that you want to play with, which is seemingly a cool design.
It is. I remember a couple of months ago, I said, we had a little conversation about what we think it was holding AdMech back from being a prevalent faction, because they've had a range that's been out since the middle end-ish, probably the last third of 7th edition. So they've been out for about 5 or 6 years, give or take, and yet they haven't really sort of exploded. They've got a very diehard, very dedicated, awesome community, but they're not quite as prevalent as a lot of other factions. And we kind of speculated. I said, I think it's because of how people were introduced to the faction through things like the War Convocation. We had to kind of have one of each unit, and then it didn't really coalesce into any other kind of list when the convocation went away. Like, you looked at it and you're like, well, I need to actually add like $400 to this to make it into a well-rounded force in 8th edition or etc. But now, literally, you could just take that war convocation and you could probably play it. And it won't be 2,000 points anymore, but that's actually a decent, fun little army.
Well, you can throw in a couple of the newer units, maybe a new transport or something. Yeah. And
holy crap, you could do that. You add in like one of each of the Taraxi, a couple of the Flyers, some of the Toaster Tanks. You'd probably make it to 2,000 points and you just have one of everything and a knight. It's fun.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that some of the things are a mixture of things you can put in your list. Is there anything that's standing out? Like, with everything that you've seen or experienced so far with the book, is there a standout unit that you said, I want to build an army around?
Oh, look, so my favorite unit in the whole Admech range has always been the Sogdonian Dragoons. Mm-hmm. They've always been my favorite. And below them, the Rustalkers and the Infiltrators. I don't know if people know about the price point of Sogdonian Dragoons over in Australia, but they've been ridiculously expensive. And so I went to the lesser of those two. So, Infiltrators and Rustalkers were my favorite bits of that codex. These boundy-legged, almost like they're on pogo stick, like assassin killers, just kind of weirdly gating towards you out of like the red mist, just seems so terrifyingly, you know, cyberpunk, you know.
2020s. I like it. The shape of their helmets and just the overall look of the figure. And then it's on this. See, this was, I think, one of the, like, the first infantry or close that were on that kind of slightly larger base.
So they were on a 40 mil. And it was really rare to have, back in 7th edition, it was really rare to have anything on a 40 mil that wasn't a Terminator. And we'd never, you know, Terminators had been long since on the shelf by that time. So it was really unique to have them, anything on a 40 mil. I think the only other thing that was maybe some of the demon models, maybe Screamers and Flamers and stuff might have been on 40s, if I remember right. Yeah, they were really unique in what they did. And I remember they used to be able to advance and charge one turn of the game in this special, it was called the Sakaaran Killclade formation, which I just adored. And I played. But they've got a whole new lease on life. They've got a bunch of really cool stratagems that enable them to do and be really exciting units again and make them have unique roles and play like the assassins they are and do surgical strikes and stuff. I think they're phenomenally exciting now.
We can kind of go down the stat line a little bit. They got a movement of 8, and that's in addition to any kind of deployment shenanigans that you do with them. Hitting weapon skill BS on 3+, 2 wounds apiece, base 2 attacks apiece.
Yeah. And they're not that expensive for their points. I think they're a little bit less expensive than I think they're only 18 or 19 points apiece. I'll double check real quickly.
I've got it right. We do not have to guess, thankfully. Oh, I'm supposed to mention that. So we were provided with the codex from Games Workshop.
Thank you very much, guys.
really grateful for them for doing that.
So 17 points a model. So for that, yeah, you get. So they're 3 points less expensive than a Primaris Marine. You get 2 more movement, the same weapon skill, bliss skill, 1 less toughness. Admittedly, that's a bit of a bummer. Same wounds, more attacks, and 1 less armor save. So they're really well pointed. For 3 points less, you're getting something that kills a lot better, is faster, is less durable. So I think they're actually kind of perfectly represent what they are. And there's some cool, I'm just looking at the Infiltrator's data sheet. There's some cool abilities that they've got. Like,
let me go with the weapons. So it comes base with the stub carbine and the power sword. Stub carbine is just it's a pistol 3 weapon, 18 inch range. Mm-hmm. So the volume of shots may come up later as we're talking about some of the stratagems, but you know, this is still kind of a bestial unit. And then they come standard with the power sword, which is 1 damage, neg 3 AP, but you can sub that out for the taser goad, and that is +2 strength, only neg 1 AP, 1 damage, but each time an attack is made with this weapon, an unmodified hit roll of 6 scores 2 additional hits.
The strength 6 is actually a big deal here, because there's a lot of more toughness 6 and toughness 3 out there with what Drakari's bringing to the table. So I think that's a really good profile on both counts. Whether you want to swap out the stub carbine for the flechette blaster, which is it's a range 12 pistol 5, but only strength 3, but still 5 shots at 12 inches that a pistol. So you know, if you were stuck in combat, you shoot him in as well. Did you see their the special rule they've got? That's really making me excited about them.
Which one is it?
The neurostatic interference. It's pretty crazy.
Each time an attack is made against this unit, if the attacking model is within 12 inches, the hit roll cannot be rerolled and the wound roll cannot be rerolled.
Wow. So all of a sudden, you know, all the defense, all the things I said, only toughness 3 with 4 up save isn't that good. But when you debuff somebody that much that they don't have rerolls to hit and to wound, they're just at the whims of the dice. You know, you can't shore up your deficiencies. And so if you add another couple of other things in there, the fact that these guys can redeploy, they have a 5 up invulnerable save now, rather than they had a 6 up before, they got a 5 up invulnerable save now. And we know there are other abilities to buff your defense in Admech, you know, things like Shroud Sun they've always had, which I've seen that they've still got. These guys actually aren't as easy to kill as you think. They're just durable enough and just annoying enough to frustrate your opponent into not knowing how much they need to put into them. I love those.
Yeah, units. A 10-man unit that denies rerolls within a certain range. Now, look, I don't even know if we're used to rolling just regular old dice anymore.
Yeah, how often do you not get to reroll a dice? At least
something. Even if it's just one hit and wound or something, you know, from a particular clan culture or something. Like, how would that feel to just roll regular old dice?
Yeah, and these guys infiltrate. So you can jump up within that 12-inch range very quickly. And then if they don't have the right weapons, essentially on their front lines, you can have them having to run out of the 12 inches and run away, e.g. bubbling them out from where they want to be, or have them try and shoot you down when they have like non-premium options.
Yeah, during the deployment, when you set up this unit, it can be set up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from the enemy deployment zone and any enemy models.
Yeah, pretty saucy. They're one of my favorite units, them and the Roughstalkers, so I'm really happy to see. They've got a couple of cool stratagems to go along with them. First one, Assassin Constructs. It's only a single CP. Using in the fight phase when a Sakaaran unit from your army selected to fight, if it's made a charge, was charged, or heroically intervened, you get just one plus one attack. And like, so one CP for just plus one attack, you could have a unit of 10 of these guys. Difference.
Pair that with a Taser Goad.
Yeah.
Possibly, because there's nothing in here that I saw about that not equating to extra attacks.
Mm-hmm. And so there's two more here. So there is a Taser Goad stratagem that makes their tasers go off on fives instead of sixes. So you think about that. You've got a unit of 10. They're going to have 31 attacks, so three each with the plus one we just talked about. Have they got two base or three base?
The regular ones, the rank and file, have two base. The Princep has three base.
So yeah, 31 attacks for one CP, one more CP for exploding fives instead of sixes. And so on 30 dice, statistically 10 of them are going to be fives and sixes, which counts for 20 more attacks, 20 more hits, you know? It's pretty crazy when you get that kind of density at strength six minus one. Pretty nice. I'm a big fan. They got one more stratagem that's really applicable here that's directly for them. And this is the one I just read out before. It applies to Roughstalkers as well. And I think some of the Taraximals, the bird boys. This is one CP. It's a Secertuous Assassins, mm-hmm. I may have pronounced that wrong. Use a stratagem at the end of your movement phase. Select one Sakaaran unit from your army that is wholly within 9 of any battlefield edge. Remove that unit from the battlefield in the reinforcement step of your next movement phase. You can set that unit up back on the battlefield anywhere that is wholly within 9 of the battlefield edge and more than 9 from enemy models. So it's the same redeploy essentially that they had in Engine War from their Psychic Awakening, and they've still got it. And the fact that you can pop up, you know, someone runs over all runs away from you and tries to punch you down outside the 12-inch range, where you can spend a CP and next turn put them back into the 12-inch range and just keep being annoying.
So it's got this prerequisite here that you've got to be there's wholly within 9 inches of any battlefield edge, but it's at the end of your movement phase, so you can scoot over there, get it to activate the stratagem.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm a big fan. I think they've got a whole new lease on life. But when you said the unit that I think has really exploded in its power, I think you actually said you were building some of them. You want to tell us about that?
Well, I was going to say, what I asked is, like, well, could you build an army around? And I think you can build it. You could, theoretically build around this Sakaaran type of massive infiltrators. I think you could.
Yeah, MSU Sakaarans would be real fun. You know, maybe one or two 10-mans and a bunch of 5-mans here and there. I mean, they're assassins. They're not meant to, you know, it's you're making a SKU list. We're not going to pretend you're not. It's like making a list all only out using suppressors and inceptors, like a fully deep striking, jump packy Primaris army. You know what you're getting into. But it's not a bad idea. It would be a lot of fun as well.
I'm building Iron Strider Ballistari.
And that's where I think the money is. If people have those chickeny boys walking out the back, they are incredibly good now. You got any ideas why?
So 48-inch range assault 2 with the Cognis Last Cannons, D3 plus 3 damage.
Mm-hmm.
It's an assault.
It's assault. Yeah, it's assault, and they move 10.
10 inches.
Very
yes.
hard. Yeah, it's very hard to deny these guys lines of fire, and they can reach anywhere on the board. The board's only 50 inches long now, really, from corner to corner, if you know, plus 10 inches, give and take. Well, it's 60, but no one's really ever corner to corner when you're shooting at them. But this guy's got 58-inch range, essentially.
58-inch threat range, 6 plus invulnerable save, 6 wounds, doesn't degrade at all, so you got to kill it to the very last wound.
Units of up to 6 of them?
Up to 6, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, usually people would take 5 to dodge the blast issues. So things like in plasma inceptors don't just get 30 shots into you, but 5 of them kills like anything. They've got a couple of really cool strats as well. One of these, which I think is possibly one of the best strats that they in the book, and where is it? It's called Dune Striders. It's a 1 CP strat. You just stratagem in your movement phase when an Iron Strider engine or Cerberus unit, so the Cerberus Raiders or the Sulphur Hounds, is selected to advance until the end of the turn. It just auto advances 6 and ignores all the penalties it would have to shoot for advancing. So that means these guys can go from movement 10 to movement 16 without an auto advance to 6 without any penalties. So it's really hard to stop them from shooting anything that they want.
And they're going to be where they want to be, a table quarter or a hole within something or whatever. And I think that gives them a lot of flexibility. Now, a unit of 5 is 375 points.
Oof, yeah.
But it's a ton of wounds, and you got the invulnerable save, and there's ways to give some cover and stuff. I mean, look, you can make this a pretty durable thing if you wanted to, or you could just be everywhere blasting people with those Cognis last cannons, forcing people to engage him.
Yeah, well, you can't dodge him, so you can't dodge him. You can't stop him being able to see what they want unless you are wholly within a obscuring, you're wholly obscured by obscuring pieces of terrain. And even then, you've only probably got one turn before they find a way around it. So you're going to have to figure out a solution or, you know, a way to shut him down. But I think that's exciting. And I like that it's a unit that, it did get a lot of love in Engine War, but still, even then, I don't think it was one of the, I don't think it was the best unit in their book. It might be the best unit in the book now, but I think the fact that it's actually it's very contentious what is the best unit in this book, because there are a lot of really good units.
Yeah, so I guess technically you probably could, like, you could still have a unit of the Dragoons scooting up to run screen for these glass cannon blasters.
Yep. Well, also, it's one interesting thing as well now. The troop choices, Rangers, can now be taken in units of 20, which is very interesting and not something I saw coming.
How's their special weapons work? Is it still X perk? Like, how many of those special weapons can you get in the 20-man units?
Well, so it used to be 2 for 5, which is always quite interesting. I used to see a lot of people taking, like, 2 transonic arquebuses or the arc rifles or plasma calibers. For every 10 models in the unit, you can have a special weapon, 9 or fewer.
Arc rifle, plasma caliber, transonic arquebus. Yeah. Yeah, those things. So it's, you got more bodies, but your amount of special weapons seems to be the same.
Yeah, I think so.
First squad.
But their guns got a big, I mean, so it was teased by or shown to us by a Wyoming community, but their guns went up quite considerably. Their range 30, they're heavy 2 now, so you'll hit a -1 if you move, but their strength 4, -1 base. And they have a very exciting stratagem as well. It's 2 CP, but essentially changes those guns into storm bolters. So they pack out the Dakka. So if you had 20 of these guys, you could get
Are you talking about the galvanic rifle?
Yeah. There's a stratagem called galvanic volley fire. It's 2 CP. You use a stratagem in your shooting phase when a Skitarii range unit from your army is selected to shoot. To the end of the phase, galvanic models, rifle models, units are equipped with have a type characteristic of rapid fire 2. So up to 4 shots per guy. Pretty good.
At 15 inches. So.
At 15 inches, yeah.
Yeah.
Although if you took Lucius, you'd get another 1.5 inches onto that because they get +3 inches range. But still, 15 to 16 and a half isn't a big deal. But yeah, it's pretty cool that you can do that. I like that they've added those little things in. I really didn't expect them to have a 20-man squad anywhere. The only things I had 20-man squads before were the Electro Priests.
Yep, which is still pretty good unit. I'm glad you brought up Lucius, so I think that's actually my favorite Forge World.
It is for me too, yeah. There are a lot of people are saying that pretty much all the Forge Worlds are good. They're saying, oh, pick your Forge World, pick your Poison. They're all pretty, pretty legit. The only one that people are saying is not up to scratch would be the Grya one. And that's only because it's a bit too specific. Like, its bonuses are it ignores combat attrition modifiers and it gets a 5+ feel no pain against mortal wounds. And so those are very specific, where all the other ones just seem to have like blanket bonuses.
Yep.
But there could be a time in the day coming when Chaos gets like a huge amount of buffs and where everyone's all like, oh, wow, I'm copying 20 mortal wounds a turn. I guess Grya is good now.
Well, you never know. We're going to see with some heavy psychic armies or whatever. But
yeah, well, exactly right. All that, none of the heavy psychic armies have been done yet. Eldar, Nids, Chaos, all of those could have a huge increase in their efficiency. T-Suns.
So let me go down why I like Lucius, though. So the Dogmas of Solar Blessings, each time an attack with a damage characteristic of 1 is allocated to a model with his Dogma, add 1 to any armor saving throw made against that attack. And then the next bullet point is add 3 to the range characteristic of range weapons that models with this Dogma are equipped with.
I would love to. So that first bit is the all is dust. It's pretty much all is dust from what the Rubik Marines get in T-Suns. Yep. So I would love to see a Lucius army painted as 1,000 Suns and have like a corrupted, as in corrupted Forge World playing as Lucius. I think that would be sweet. It would tie them together nicely as well. But those 2 buffs on these guys is very, very potent. That means that they're very strong, very resilient to things you'd usually take to try and knock them down. Things like Hurricane Bolters, Assault Cannons, all these things, they get a better save than they would otherwise.
So you're already an aggressive unit with their firepower, that really the only way to deal with them is to remove the amount of shots they can take. And they become a little bit more durable, which I think this is going to be a standout Forge World. So then we go down to their, like, each one of the Forge Worlds is set up to where you have a dogma that has a couple of bullet points. You've got the, in similar way to, you know, how we've seen the Death Guard and the Space Marines is that you get a special warlord trait, a special relic, and then a special stratagem. And the stratagem here is Legio Teleportarium. Use a stratagem before the battle during the Declare Reserves and Transport step. If you're playing a mission without this step, use the stratagem during deployment instead. Select one Lucius unit, excluding vehicle units, from your army. You can set that unit up in a Teleportarium instead of setting it up on the battlefield. If you do so, then in the reinforcement step, one of your movement phases, you can set up that unit anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from any enemy models. You can only use this stratagem once, unless you are playing a strike force battle, in which case you can use this stratagem twice, or an onslaught battle, in which case you can use this stratagem three times. So what are 2,000 point games?
Strike force.
Use it twice.
Use it twice. It's a good, very good strat.
One CP. One CP here. Matter. No restriction on unit size, CP, power level or whatever. Only can't usually, be vehicles.
You're exactly right, because that's usually what this would come with. It'd be like a 1/2 or 2/3 CP strat, where it goes like, if it's over, units over 6 models or is over, 11 power level, it costs 2 CP or 3 CP. This one is just one, no matter what you got. No restriction except for excluding vehicles. So
let me put a cautionary, just a word of advice out there for anyone that did not know. Cataphron breachers are on 60mm bases.
they're huge.
So when you're wanting to drop 6 of those into somewhere after the game has already started, it's going to get difficult. But that's what I thought. Yeah. Like, I cannot wait to drop some breachers.
And Cataphron breachers, they went up. Their durability went up quite a bit. So they got a 2+ armor save base now.
Yes.
Which is pretty saucy, especially when coupled with Shroud Sum. So they could be sitting there in the open as long as you're having a 1+ armor save on a 60mm base that's very hard to circumnavigate. Like, they can just wall people off from objectives.
Yeah, destroyers / breachers is what I was thinking about. The breachers have a little bit longer of a range. The destroyers have seemingly a little bit shorter range on their weapons.
Yeah, the breachers slap better in combat, and the destroyers smash better from range. There are some really exciting Forge Worlds, though. And I like how you said they're arranged. They're like arranged in like a little package. You get your Forge World package. You get your Dogma, your Warlord Trait, Arcana Mechanicum, your Relic, essentially. And then you get at the bottom, you get your Stratagem. I love it how it's arrayed like that little package, rather than having to swoop back and forward. What is their strat? Does their strat actually work with the Warlord Trait? Or what about that one with that one? And you're flipping back 4 or 5 pages every time. This is much better. Very good job by G-Dub.
Wrath of Mars is worth mentioning, I think, as well.
Yes.
So the Mars, that this is where it calls from, like the this is the, which when you look at it or think about an Admech army, like this is your boilerplate Admech army. And the Wrath of Mars used to be this, like, everyone's incredibly potent. It's like on, I think it was 6s to hit caused mortal wounds.
Or was it sixes used to be wound?
Sixes.
Uncapped. There was no cap on it. And now they've chucked a cap on it and some caveats.
Yeah, so use the stratagem in your shooting phase when a Mars unit is selected to shoot. Until the end of the phase, each time a model that in the unit makes an attack, an unmodified wound roll of 6 inflicts 1 mortal wound on the target in addition to any normal damage to a maximum of 6 mortal wounds. Mm-hmm. If the unit has a power rating of 11 or more, the stratagem costs 2 CP. Otherwise, it's 1 CP.
That's exactly what we're saying about the scaling on the Lucius one. It doesn't have that caveat. This one does. There's been a little conjecture about this. There's been some people talking about how this actually works. Some people are saying, if I have 3 Castellan robots, and one of them shoots here, one of them shoots there, one of them shoots there, each one of them can do 6 mortal wounds per. As some people are saying, it's 6 mortal wounds total for the unit that I use the stratagem on. Some people are saying another way. I always think go with the conservative approach until I hear confirmation otherwise.
Put that on the fact watch.
Yeah, yeah. How do you think it works, mate?
I think it's total. I think once you enact this, the stratagem has the capability of dishing out X number, and it states it here in the stratagem.
Yeah. So I think that's good enough. 1 CP to do 6 mortal wounds. Where else do you get that? You and I and many other people listening in 8th edition, we're paying 1 CP for our Hellfire Missile strat, which does D3 strat, D3 for 1 CP.
I've never done that.
You thought it was bad straight away. I never did it. I was like, I happen to have this missile launcher that I put in here for this strat, and this knight has 1 wound left. I guess that's where it's going.
I support you in every way. But I've never done it. points.
But you wasted your command points. But that's fair. But you will use this. I mean, I do think you will find people out there will be like, what is the best 10 power level unit I can do that will get this on it? You know, like the Flamer Chicken, so the Flamer Taraxi, the Sterilizers or what they're called, or the Sulfur Hounds. Here's a sneaky little one that people need to be careful of. And here's one that I want to point out to people so they don't get maybe gotcha'd by it. I'm not saying this is going to be a big gotcha out there, but this is one that I had mentioned to me that I was like, oh, I would not have seen that coming. And it's Cerberus Raiders. They are snipers. They already have sniper guns, two shots apiece, and they already do mortal wounds on sixes. So if you get a unit of five of them, or you know, you can go up to six, I believe. You get, you know, six of them, you've got 12 shots. You can buff their ballistic skill through some various different ways to have them hitting on twos. And then every six is two mortal wounds. So on average, all I need to do is pock off two sixes and you've taken wounds and then four saves at least negative one AP. So chances are you're going to pop a six wound character with that, with a one CP strat and a unit of five or six Cerberus Raiders. And I think that one might catch some people out. So I'm happy to put that information out there. Ooh. If you see five Cerberus Raiders, kill two of them immediately. Oh,
good Lord. I mean, look, I didn't need much of an excuse to pick up that one, to pick up that unit.
That's true.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Like that. So what? So how much are the points wise on those guys? The Cerberus Raiders are 16 points apiece and plus 5 points for the enhanced data tether.
For those of you unaware, they're Galvan and Carbine, which is the sniper weapon. It's only 18 inch range, but they are a very quick unit. They're a unit that firstly, the Carbine's assault 2, strength 4, minus 1, 1 damage. And of course, like I said, they and 6s to wound are a mortal wound in addition. But they move 12, so they've got a 30-inch threat range in addition to having a scout move.
Yeah, the skirmishing line is a rule. At the start of the first battle round, models in this unit can make a normal move. They cannot end this move within 9 inches of any enemy models, but you do get 30 inches to try to get closer to a character.
Yeah, and so be careful. They're now a sneaky good, Azmars are now a sneaky good sniper unit.
The rule there is Eye of Cerberus. Each time you select a target for a weapon, a model in this unit is equipped with, you can ignore the Lookout Sir rule each time a ranged attack is made by a model in this unit. An unmodified wound roll of 6 inflicts 1 mortal wound on the target in addition to any normal damage.
Yeah, so odds on, if you've got a unit of 6 of them, they've got 12 shots. Actually, you can't take a unit of 6. Let me just double check on the line.
Eight Raiders, alpha, so 9.
Up to 9, yeah. So if you see a unit of 5 or more and they're Mars, you're like, oh, I gotta be a little bit careful there. Like they'll put down a 4 wound character very, very easily. Things like your Tallymans, they're a very good unit for taking care of things like the 2+ invulnerable save Archons that people have got kicking around. So yeah, they're a good little problem solver unit. But
Apothecaries?
Apothecaries, all those the Ancients with the minus 1 damage banner for Dark Angels, lots of different units they can target out at the moment.
I know we jumped a bit, but I think that was a great point. Whenever we discuss one of these, I think talking about what could be a real powerful combination, probably worth jumping to.
Is there one you want to jump to from here?
Stygies. Stygies was a popular choice because of their, I want to say durability, but their stealthiness that translated into durability.
Yeah, they were the most powerful until essentially, it was them and Mars pretty much fighting out for supremacy. Most people took both at the same time. But what's good about Stygies now?
So Stygies is a little bit different. So each time a ranged attack targets a vehicle, unit excluding a unit with the core keyword with this dogma, if the attacker is more than 18 inches away, then the target is treated as having the benefits of dense cover against that attack.
Yep. So it's a little bit worse than it was. And so there's another one, though. It's pretty much everything.
This one has 3 bullet points. Yeah. Each time a ranged attack targets a unit excluding vehicle units without the core keyword with this dogma, if the attacker is more than 12 inches away, then the target is treated as having the benefits of dense cover against the attack. And then each time a unit with this dogma declares a charge, none of the targets of that charge can hold steady or set to defend.
Have you had much experience with the hold? Well, sorry, I'm taking this on a tangent, but I'd be keen to discuss with you how often the hold steady and set to defend comes up, because I forget to use it every
time. Most people don't remember. And that was the subject of the show, is like how to give yourself a leg up in some of these games is remembering that rule or those two rules exist.
So it's very similar to what it was. So outside 12 inches, you're minus 1 to hit to all intents and purposes. They've got a very good warlord trait. Like their warlord trait is, I think, their warlord trait and their stratagem are both extremely good. The warlord trait is called Veiled Hunter. at the start of the first battle round, you can set up you can select up to two Stygies units wholly within your deployment zone, remove those units from the battlefield, then set them up anywhere on the battlefield that is wholly within your deployment zone. If the mission uses strategic reserves, you can place these into strategic reserves regardless of how many they cost. It's just a redeploy. It's just a straight up redeploy of up to two units. I like that it doesn't have to be the bearer and two units
of your Ballistari.
I was about to say of your Ballistari, because now you know you're going first and they're going to be on the front line. And if they need a screen, maybe you put them on the front line and they've got a screen of Raiders or something with them as well. I'm always a big fan of redeploy anything. I think redeploy is a very powerful thing, a very powerful tool in a player's hands. But you want to read out the strat for us?
Stratagem is use this stratagem during your deployment. It's like one Stygies core infantry unit from your army. When you set up that unit, it can be set up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from the enemy deployment zone and any enemy models.
Yeah, so you can really stack a lot of outflanking, a lot of scout moving, a lot of infiltrating units in a Admech army now. Like, you can threaten a lot of turn one charge potentially, because a lot of the things you can infiltrate with this can be, you know, movement 12, movement 8, all sorts. And I think it actually adds a really cool dynamic to an army. You wouldn't expect them to work like this. Like, they're working kind of like Alpha Legion used to. And they did then, but back then they didn't have the melee powers they do now. They didn't have these excellent explosive melee units, things like the Taraxi, things like the Sakaran units. And on top of that, you can have them backed up by Service Raiders, by Sulphur Hounds, these things that are already, so the Raiders are already going to be scouting up, getting in the way, being nuisance units, and then you can have all these little surgical pieces all over the place. I like that this one says during deployment. I need to get some clarification, because it doesn't say before the battle. Before the battle usually to me means I can use this as many times as I want, unless it's capped. If it says during deployment, I'm not quite sure if that means it's capped or not. I have to look at the terms and conditions in the rule book to see when that would happen. Because if you can just use this infinitely, if I can just use this on, you know,
during
four or
deployment
five minutes,
is before first turn is determined and before the beginning of the battle.
So you would be able to use this more than once, right?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, that was my assumption, but I didn't want to put it out there. But
so deploy armies is step 11 and begin the battle is step 14.
No, fair. And I think that's really, it's really exciting. And it makes Stygies is one that I think is a bit of a sleeper, but my true sleeper is Riser. And maybe you want to talk about Dense Cover before we jump over to that one.
We've talked about terrain enough. We can keep going with that.
So I made some parallels. I can't remember where or when, but I said some stuff at some time. I say a lot of stuff. Some of it's stupid. Some of it's maybe okay. But I said that the reason why we think that, sorry, the Bloody Rose and that Novok have been the auto go-to for those armies, for Sisters respectively and for Necrons, is because you're taking an army that is already okay at something, e.g. Sisters are already pretty good at shooting. You can build a very good shooting army. But then you take a very good shooting army and you make it well-rounded by making it good in combat as well with Bloody Rose. Same thing for Necrons. Necrons are a decent shooting army. And then when you take Novok, they become a good melee army as well. Like, you take a warrior that wasn't good in combat, you make it Novok, it's respectable.
Yeah, so how's he pounding me in the face with his little golf blaster and his little skinny arms?
Yeah, I know. But then that's what I saw when I looked at Riser. I was like, wow, so you got Admech, you know, one of the shootiest, DACA intensive, amazing, you know, ranged profile armies we have. And then you just get to turn it into Blood Angels. And I was like, Paul is going to love this. So their dogma is Red in Cog and Claw. Each time a model with this dogma makes an melee attack, if it made a charge move, was charged, or performed a heroic intervention, add one to the wound roll. And then it gets +1 to charge in addition. My man, is this the Forge World for you?
Look, it is. I think the tricksy nature of part of the Admech and the machines and all that kind of stuff, it draws me to that and more of this. But, you know, I think I can rock an orange overcoat.
You actually quite like the orange they use for this game as well. I'm a fan. The rest of it goes on to say, like, so the Wall of Trade is Citation in Savagery. The start of the fight phase, select one friendly Riser core unit within 6 of the Warlord. To the start of the next fight phase, every time a model that unit makes a melee attack, the armor penetration characteristic is improved by 1.
That adds up.
So that's big. It's real good, dude. All of a sudden, if you wanted to take, you know, of those 20 breaches or whatever, they could be +1 to wound, with +1 to charge, actually have an AP. You're taking taking a unit that's not good in combat, and then just put a dogma on them and a warlord trait, and all of a sudden they're pretty respectable, like for like. I'm not saying they're going to walk up and smash down a knight or anything like Sangard would, but like for like them versus Poxwalkers, them versus like if they charged into witches, like, you know, so to speak, you know, like for like, I'm talking about other toughness three infantry, they all of a sudden become really, really quite nice.
Yeah, I agree with you. All those things just, it's incremental things that you turn this, like you were just talking about, you turn this unit from a single purpose or seemingly single purpose into incredibly dual, triple. I mean, it's doing everything on the battlefield and for the low, low cost of just taking this as your forge world.
Exactly right. And you perfectly said there, man, like taking a unit that was monopurpose and giving it another purpose just really just doubles what it can do, triples what it can do. It is everything.
You know, I think you and I can't remember if we said this during the show or in the pre-show, but there's you could build a case for every forge world that we've really spoken about so far.
I think you can build a case for all of them. Absolutely all of them. There's some funny stuff that I came up with. I'm not quite sure. I need to go down the rabbit hole a little bit much to see if some things with the Book of Rust and how they interact with this book, if what you have to give up, what you lose.
With Metallica?
But like Metallica. But I was talking about the Servitor Maniple, or whatever it's called, defense
for the
cohort.
Yep.
So there's Agrippina. There's the Agrippina Forge World, and their dogma is staunch defenders. Each time modeled with this dogma makes a ranged attack. Target's unit is within half range, increase the AP by one. So it's very similar to Mephrit for Necrons. Each time, and then it goes on to say, each time an enemy unit declares a charge against a unit with this dogma, if it is not within engagement range of another enemy unit, it can just hold steady or set to defend regardless. So that's plus one to hit or fives for Overwatch, wherever it is on the table. But what I thought was the really crazy one, and you were talking about breaches and how you quite like the breaches and how tough they are. For one CP, use a stratagem before the battle. Select one Agrippina Cataphron Servitor unit from your army. Add one to the toughness characteristics of models in that unit. A unit can only be selected for the stratagem once. You can use this stratagem once unless you're playing Strike Force, in which case it's twice, Onslaught three times, etc. So toughness 6, 2 plus, possibly 1 plus with Shroud Psalm breaches, mate. And I hate to tell you, but you do give up you'd give up the dogma for Agrippina if you took the defense cohort from Book of Rust, but those guys can also be minus 1 damage in their own deployment zone or on an objective. Ooh. And whew, you're starting to see the layers of this book come out. There's just more layers, as deep as you want to go.
Let me slip in dense cover here for a second. Subtract 1 from the hit rolls made from range weapons if at least 3 inches tall.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the Stygies, yeah? Stygies still being minus 1 to hit?
Yeah, 1 from hit rolls from range weapon, yep.
I would like to let people know that if they do decide to go with the defense cohort, your army is just going to be breaches, pretty much, because you can't take any of the Skitarii units. Breaches, destroyers, and electro priests is pretty much all you're allowed to have. Unless there's extra... Oh, no, yeah, never mind. I will after deep dive that at some other point, but I just know you cannot take any Skitarii units with that defense cohort. But yeah, the minus 1 damage on a toughness 6 1 plus armor save unit is crazy.
Those models, I mean, they're troop choices, which we haven't really talked about, you know, like harped on it a bit, but these breachers and destroyers are in the troop slot, and that is incredibly powerful. I'm happy to see that there's a little bit of balance and to make a decision about what you take, because everything you talked about with the Rangers and the Vanguard so far is like, those are, you know, with the increase in unit size, the increased power in the weapons, there's not a go-to choice here.
The breachers and destroyers, they're not core. And the other change there was that they're bikers, but he shows some foresight by G-Dub. So the biker thing, it kind of will just stop them like essentially getting cover easily. But G-Dub is showing some foresight. They've got this special rule called tracked mobility. Models in this unit can move through walls, girders, chains, and foliage of terrain features without the breachable terrain trait. And they go with the breachable terrain trait without pediment. So they can go through walls like they're infantry, even though they're not infantry. So that shows some foresight for them. So they want to have some give and take. Hey, harder to get cover, but you can still use these guys to go through walls and stuff. I think it's well thought out by G-Dub. Nice compromise.
Well, it makes sense.
Exactly right. It does
make
sense.
They actually have huge tracks.
Well, they're just Kool-Aid mating through the walls. They're just, you know, if you see what they're so, especially the breaches, those guys are stacked up with armor. They got plates on plates on plates. If that thing drove at me at like 40 miles an hour, it's probably going to go through that wall, you know?
Yeah. Well, I wish we had read right here to talk about how the tanks go through the walls. There is no concrete that can stop modern technology, and it's cool that. But look, I think that you know, we talked about the footprint of these earlier, and so knowing that you're not going to be, you know, basically deploy them in the one little spot on your table and they never move again because they can't is not an issue because of that force out of that rule.
Agreed. There is one strat I'd like to tell people about because it could. I don't want to say it's going to be a problem, I just think it's something you may need to plan for. I don't quite can't quite tell how powerful it's going to be just yet. Yeah, so there's this stratagem for the Taraxa units. It's called Booster Thrust. It's 1 CP. You use a stratagem at the end of your turn. Select one Taraxa unit from your army. Remove that unit from the battlefield. In the reinforcement steps of your next turn, your next movement phase, you can set that unit back up on the battlefield anywhere that is more than 9 inches away from the enemy models. If the battle ends and they're off the table, they count as destroyed. So let's say you start them in reserve already. You bring them down, you flame the screen away, because you'll probably take the flamer boys, because I think they're better, but, you know, so much people can like what they like. Mm-hmm. You use your flamer, let's say they're riser, so they get an 8-inch charge, you use a reroll, they get in, they kill another part of the screen, and then at the end of your turn, they bounce off, and you don't get a chance to interact them. The opponent doesn't get a chance to interact with them or remove them. They just come down the next turn and do the same thing again. And as long as you've got one CP, at the end of your turn, you can keep bouncing them off and on the board. Without your opponent really having a turn when they're there for them to account for. I mean, it's 1 CP. They're not the cheapest unit out there. They don't do a crazy amount of damage. Like, they're only, you know, they're pretty good in combat, but from range, they're only, you know, got a flame, and that's negative one.
12-inch range, D6, strength 4, neg 1, auto hit. I mean, absolutely, because it's a flamer.
But I can tell you, like, when I'm playing, if I crack my guardsman out, this is going to be a problem. I'm going to be like, how do I stop this?
Better get your chimeras. So, that's what you do it.
Yeah, exactly right. Get everybody in a box. Everybody in a box. So the other ones here, it's interesting because I talk about terms and conditions a little bit. I talk about the terms and conditions around stratagem use and around waller trays and things like that. Usually with something like this, when you have to jump off the board, it has to say things like when you're not in engagement range, or if you haven't arrived on the board that turn, or et cetera, et cetera. There's none of that here. It just says remove it from the battlefield. So I don't know if you can deep strike it and remove it in the same turn. There might be a clause in the GT pack or somewhere saying a unit can never come on and go off in the same turn.
We'll review the rare rules and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it could very well be in there somewhere, but there's certainly nothing stopping you from, you know, deploying them on the table, moving, advancing them out, flaming, killing a bunch of things, charging, and then bouncing off, and then just being annoying like that.
You mentioned that, like, the Stygy stratagem too. It's like, you know, it's still subject to the other rules of, like, the game of 40K and what you can put in reserve, how much you can put in reserve and that kind of stuff. So maybe there's provision for this as well.
Maybe there's a provision there, but just on face value, just as it is right now, without any clauses attached to it, this is a very good stratagem. It's a stratagem that might mean that people have to run out and buy 10 bird boys. I certainly would. If it works the way that it looks like right there, it's incredibly powerful.
There's just so much good in here, though, man. That is good, yes, but to me, it sounds more annoying than back.
It is, yeah. It's more frustrating, and I know G-Dub has tried to get rid of a lot of the frustrating things in here. I can tell you right now, one of the things that I thought was going to be removed was the Cerberus Raiders. Remember the Cerberus Raiders? You declare a charge on them, and then they run away.
That kind of stuff, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, I can tell you that has changed in a lot of ways. Let me just see if I can pick that one up for you guys quickly. Because it used to be a very frustrating thing, didn't it?
I mean, that was one of those things to where you basically would blank an opponent's turn, or their big crushing move. You would just be like, sorry, I'm bouncing out.
And so how it used to work was that you would declare a charge on this unit, and then for some CP, they would get a chance to make a move. If they weren't engaged already, they could make an advance move. And usually what would happen is that they'd move directly out of your charge range. So unless you were literally on top of them, you have to be an inch away, they would move 12 inches, which would put them outside of your charge range, because you can't declare a charge on something that's more than 12 inches away unless you clocked the 12. Well, so technically you've already declared the charge on them. So if you clocked the 12 and they moved 12 away, you'd still make it. Or if they moved, you know, 12 to 12, you'd make it on them 11.
It became unlikely that you would make your charge.
Exactly right. And what became frustrating about that in addition is that the better people got at using it, the more they use it to screw you up. And so they would be like, this is a Service Raiders unit, and I know you got a really big deadly charge over here. And so when you declare my Service Raiders, they're going to go and they're going to get in the way of the charge you want to make. And you're not going to be able to charge into the unit. They're actually going to give you a lot of...
You just moved. I don't think it said you had to move away.
Yeah, you can move in any direction, whatever you want. Maybe. Yeah, so it's called Tactica Oblica. It's 2 CP. Use this stratagem in your opponent's charge phase when a Service Raiders unit from your army is selected as a target of a charge. If the unit is not within engagement range of any enemy units, it can make a normal move until the end of the phase. That unit cannot fly Overwatch, set to defend, and your opponent can then select new targets for the charge. So they can't just null your charge. So you can still use it to be savvy and get in the way and block up other people's charges or close them off from getting into you.
To insulate another unit or something like that.
Yeah. But you can't stop them from then reassigning their charges. And it's still 2 CP. So there'll be, rather than it being like a core mechanic you'll build all your lists around, maybe it's just like a clutch, seize the moment kind of, burst their bubble kind of thing, rather than just being an oppressive, every army has got 3 of these and you have to figure out how to get around all 3 of them before you can actually get into the meat and potatoes of their army. So I really like that. I think it's a very elegant change.
Yeah, I dig it. Hey, we've been on a tear. Let's take a quick break for a little station identification, word from our sponsors, and then we'll come right back.
Beautiful.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. Like, I know we are ripping through this just at a feverish pace, but there's a lot to cover. So one of the things that has already kind of started to surface after folks have done, you know, some of their early reviews is that this is kind of a thick like army generation, like in buff management and auras and things that you can kind of stack. Are you getting that impression?
Yeah, I am. I'm getting the impression that this is, even if you took half of that stuff away, this would still be a good book. I think I said it at the start, it kind of goes, it's kind of a rabbit hole. You can go as deep as you want with it. It's like Alice in Wonderland, or Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, whichever, you know, childhood trope you enjoy. It's so much going on here. I mean, it starts right at the beginning, I don't know if you remember, when they first came out, there essentially were 2 books. There was the Skitarii book and there was the Cult Mechanicus book. And then that was essentially like the first supplements that we ever had, because they were kind of 2 halves of the same book, 2 supplements for the same whole. And back then they had different protocols for each one, you know, we got, I suppose, doctrines for Marines or whatnot. There was Doctor Imperatives and there was Canticles of the Omnisire.
Yep.
And they've actually brought that back, haven't they?
Yes. In a bit. And
so just to explain what those are, they're 2 sets of buffs. One of them, the Canticles of the Omnisire, being similar to what we had before. We got Shroud's Arm, you know, Remorseless Fist, Iron Soul, and Benediction, and all those things. Similar to what they were. Many of them have been improved, because I think before, the only 2 that anybody cared about was Shroud's Arm and Reroll 1s to hit in range. And then we've got a Doctor Imperative. So the Cult Mechanicus side of your army gets Canticles of the Omnisire, and then the Skitarii units get Doctor Imperatives. And these are really interesting additions, because they're both a buff and a debuff, and you choose which one you want and change them at the start of the turns. To quickly explain and quickly run down some of the better ones, of course, Shroud's Arm is back, as being when this Canticle is active, units count as receiving benefits of light cover. And then, you know, you've got your Ignoring Morale 1 in Iron Soul, you've got +1 Strength in Remorseless Fist, etc., etc. But some of these Doctrinas are really quite cool. So one of the first ones is Doctrina in Protector Imperative. Increase the ballistic skill characteristics of models in this unit by 1. So just +1. But then it comes with a debuff as well. Reduce the weapon skill characteristics of models in this unit by 1. So it's always a bit of give and take with your Skitarii. And especially
these optimization and a depreciation.
So
you're amping up all power to the shields, front shields, or whatever.
Exactly. And, perfectly explained, mate.
Something's got to give.
I'll quickly read out how these work, just to give people some context. So the Doctrina Imperatives, if every unit from your army has the Adeptus Mechanicus keyword, then this unit's characteristics are modified depending on which Doctrina is active. Each Doctrina has 2 effects, of course. At the start of the battle round, if there is a Doctrina Assembler model from your army on the battlefield, you can select 1 Doctrina Imperative that has not yet been active from your army. If you do so to the end of the battle round, that is active for the rest of the turn. And the Canticles of the Omnisire are essentially the same thing. Like, you change them at the start of the battle round, you select 1 Canticle has not yet been active to be active. And there's a bunch of ways to play with them. Like doctrines for Marines, yeah? There's a bunch of ways to give doctrines to things that don't have them. And the cool thing about Mars, which we haven't talked about, is that they take the Cult Mechanicus side of this, the Canticles of the Omnisire, and they give it to the Skitarii portions of that army. So they all get benefits.
I'm digging that. If you're building a collection, then it allows you different things to optimize towards or around, or things to take advantage of. So I like that part. Where I think it starts to get a little a little thick is when you are managing this during the course of the game.
Yeah,
of knowledge that your opponent has to have, i.e., that you have to change this thing every round.
Yeah, yep. I suppose that's where it kind of falls down. It's a lot of. I'm not a huge fan of a lot of bookkeeping when it comes to playing my games. Some is necessary. Some is absolutely necessary. Some has always been necessary in playing a game of 40K.
Well, till the end of time. You don't have psychic powers, you know, really, yep, in this. True. So this is kind of like your thing that you have to manage. Mm. There's a little bit of, you know, a little bit of note keeping, but you've also got your ruler traits. I mean, there's things that you've got to do in like army list construction, but once the game gets going, you're just kind of rotating through these things or manipulating them through stratagems forge worlds or whatever. I don't think that's the heavy part. I think the heavy part comes into your opponent helping you manage that in some way.
Yeah, and I think I really hope I haven't actually checked to see if there's cards of these that have come out, because I really hope there's some cards of these, like the Necrons got their protocols and stuff, and you can just have the one face up that's active in that turn, etc., because that makes it a whole lot easier.
No cards for yourself, even if you don't have those things, would go a long way, because you know, we talk about, and not to take it on a tangent, but like the hobby things, like squad markings on your miniatures look cool, but they're also a way for you to communicate the game state to your opponent.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so things like that's really good. Cards, some kind of note for this kind of thing.
Yeah. But some of these canticles and doctrinas are really powerful. Like the one that plus one list skill is obviously very, very, very good. The other one that I really like is the Bulwark Imperative. So this is improve the save characteristics of models in these units by one. Cannot have a save characteristic of better than a 2+. But the depreciation part of this is reduce the move characteristics of models by 3. It's very cleverly done, these gives and these takes. And I like them a lot. It really gives a lot of power in your play. His hands, but also gives you some risk and reward. I prefer that way of playing it. I prefer that way of structuring it.
Yeah. So this is an aggressive. This is an aggressive codex. Things have decent move, decent threat range. Let's just say they have, I think, exceptional threat range in every phase of the game.
Yeah, and on top of that, they have good profiles for sitting back. Like, because so AdMech has become semi synonymous with like gun lines. Yeah, they've become, they're just Imperial Tau. And I think while that, you know, that can be true, if you know, people talk about the crazy Mars gun lines that were out there for a while, it was never a case that they had to be played like that. And I think that we talk about like the rising tide or an evening out of the player field. I feel like a lot of the best stuff has come down just a little bit. Things like Iron Striders have maybe even gone up from where they were. But my God, the bottom of the barrel stuff has just come up so much. Yeah. Like you'll see a unit or two of Rustalkers in every army. You'll see Taraxi in every army. You'll see more Electro Priests of both types probably. You'll see more actual legitimate infantry troops rather than just your min squads.
Well, I think if there wasn't a little bit of a negative to some of these buffs, it would seem obscene.
Yeah, of course. Exactly right. And it brings us to another unit that has been... it's a weird unit, like Castellan robots, mate. What are your thoughts on them? Because some people swear by them, some people swear off them.
So I love them because they have so many shots. They don't shine as much, you know, or sorry, they don't outshine the other units in here for the exact reason that you mentioned, is that a lot of things got better, a lot of things got more playable. And so the Castellan robots they don't stand out versus that stuff, but I still think they're really playable. I mean, the weapons, it's a lot of shots.
Yeah. One thing is it is. So they've changed a little bit. The first thing I'll say is they got another wound. Praise be to the Omnicide directly that they're now no longer 6 wounds. Because you know what everyone does now? They all do 3d3 plus 3 damage. So getting those 6s is so much easier. 7 wounds, mwah, love it. So happy that they got
toughness 7, which I think they were before, 7 wounds. They have the battle protocols still.
So the Braddock protocols have changed. Of course, there's the Aegis one that gives them a 2+ armor save. No longer increases their... I thought it used to increase their invulnerable saves to a 4+ as well. They just have a standing 4+ from the repulsor, a standing 5+ from the repulsor grid. And each time an invulnerable saving throw is made for a model in this unit against a ranged attack and a modified would roll 6, still bounces back a mortal wound, which I think is very funny. But they no longer double shoot. What they have is the Conqueror Protocol and the Protector Protocol. The Conqueror one, when it's active, they have a weapon skill of 2+. And if they're the Protector one is, they have a ballistic skill of 3+, because they're now a 4+ weapon skill ballistic skill. Yeah. I think they may have been before. And so there's no double shooting anymore, but their offensive profiles have been enhanced. Their fist guns, the ones that they have in their fists, are now 24-inch range. I think they were greater than that before, but now 24-inch range, heavy 3, strength 6, minus 1, 2 damage, and ignores the benefits of dense cover.
Covering. So, no neg 1.
Yeah, really good. And then their shoulder gun, the shoulder blaster, is the same as it was before, I believe. Heavy 3, 36-inch range, strength 6, minus 2, 1 damage. But this is where it gets kind of interesting.
Also, the minus 1 for dense cover.
Yeah, spot on. So their Castellan Fist puts them to strength 10, minus 3, 3 damage, and they make one additional attack with the fist if they have one. And they start off with 3 attacks. So I actually think, if I'm going to put it out there right now, I think the best loadout is one fist, one gun, and the shoulder gun. Because having 4 attacks that can be hitting on 3s with these guys at strength 10, minus 3, 3 damage is really handy to have. It's just really handy to have in your back pocket.
It is hard to hide them. They're on the big fat bases, and you want huge them bases to be able to be out kind of exposed so they can be shooting things. They're 100 points apiece.
It's reduced. It's less than they were.
Well, sure. But I'm saying they're in competition now with other units.
That's true. That is very true. Yeah.
So it's going to be tough to fit them in.
I still like them. I like them more than I did before now. I like them because they're more versatile. They were like something of a one-trick pony. You just took them, you know, with Call and Mars, and then you just Wrath and Mars something off the table. And I think now they've got more opportunities in the game. You still might not see them. They still might not end up being the best thing out there. But if you've got some on the shelf, I think they're great.
Yeah. While you're building up your army from what you used to have to maybe what you want to do now, or just rounding out your options, I think this is a unit you probably have already, and it's perfectly acceptable to get them on the table.
Absolutely, my man.
Yeah, I'm digging it. Yeah, so he asked me, yes, I also have a unit of them. but they look cool. I love that, like, that 1940s space
robot.
Yeah, robot look to them.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. Yeah, it's all over them. And look, movement 8, you know, you can make them a little bit speedier in some ways. As Riser, they get plus 1 to charge, and then their strength 10, minus 3, 3 damage with plus 1 to wound. Like, you are going to smash. You're going to absolutely smash some people. Big fan. I think they're cool. They might not be the best thing out there, but I think people are going to dust them off and give them a go and not be disappointed.
Yeah, you're definitely going to be getting it. But while you're building your Iron Striders, put these on the table. And then they'll be deleting some models for you while you work on those others.
Yeah. And I suppose, I may have missed it before, but Iron Striders are core. They're actually core. And so they get every buff. You can put everything on them. There's no buff that is in this book that you can't put on unless it says infantry only or whatever. But there's a lot more you can do with them. Because
they're vehicles also, if I remember right. So there's things that another where the kind of the denseness of there are things that, you know, like we were talking about the Stygies, you know, you get the buff at this range if you're a vehicle, you get a buff at this X range, Y range if you're a non-vehicle, you know, and then it goes on to non-core vehicle type thing. So, you know, you gotta, this is one of those ones you have to look at. And if you are trying to wring out efficiency, you got to make sure everything stacks up the way that you want it to stack up. And we're pretty much out of time, but we didn't talk about any of the HQ and elite buffs and that kind of stuff.
We did not. There are quite a few. Remember when they first came out, there was a really small model range. It seems like between their first 8th edition codex and now their 9th edition codex, their range has doubled. And it's because it has. They got 3 flyers, they got the hounds, they got the Taraxi, they've got so much more stuff now. There's actually still so much to talk about in this book.
Let's talk about the brand new model, the Skitarii Marshal. I think that's the best new for this. So wounds 4, strength 3, toughness 3, 4 plus save, you know, nothing amazing there. But the control edict, in your command phase, you can select one friendly Forge World Skitarii unit within 9 inches of this model, or you can select one friendly Forge World Skitarii data tether unit anywhere on the battlefield. Until the start of your next command phase, that unit ignores the depreciation effect of the currently active Doctrina imperative.
Yeah, and so those data tethers are being held out by a lot of different units. Most of your vehicles have or can have a data tether. So this guy can just point at a unit on the other side of the table. And that Doctrina I said before, plus 1 to save and minus 3 move, and you're like 6 inches away from an objective. And you're like, oh, you there. You need to get on that objective and you need to survive. So I'm turning off the negative thing so you can just move on to that objective and still have plus 1 save. Really handy, dude.
I don't know if you remember when I said that if you didn't have that negative, some of these units would become obscene.
Yes.
Well. This guy can turn them off.
Exactly right.
But I don't mind the tax. You have to take this character who is, I mean, on a surface level, not lethal, not super deadly.
Yeah. He doesn't do much else. But there is a couple of things that make this guy very, very good. There's a couple of things that make this guy very good. I'm trying to look for it right now. There it is. There is a relic that makes this guy into a captain as well. It's the Exemplar's Eternity. Skitarii Marshal model only. The bearer's Inflosa Skull uplink is replaced with the following ability. While a friendly Forge World Skitarii core unit was in 6 of this model, each time a model in that unit makes an attack, reroll a hit roll of 1 and a reroll a wound roll of 1. So you take this 45-point model And now he's giving you reroll ones to hit and ones to wound. He becomes bordering on an auto take, guys. I suggest everyone runs out and grabs one of these if you are a budding binary lover, because this guy is very good. Yeah. Well done. Yeah, he's very good. He's very good value. I believe it's only 45 points. I'll double check on that quickly. Marshall, 45 points. So 45 points and maybe one CP, or is your warlord or takes a free relic, and reroll wants to hit, wants to wound, and point at you, good sir. You no longer have the downside of the upside thing. Oof. Seems good, man. Seems good. You were right to point him out.
Well, that's it for the time we have for this week's show. But this is a codex I'm excited about. Like, this is, you know, for all those reasons that we said. I've got a cool color scheme. I use a little real beat up, like blue and brown, white weather, color scheme I've worked on for a number of years, and I really like how it goes on the models. And I think it's going to be a joy to play.
Me too. I think this is going to be an absolute joy for people to, especially something for AdMech players to be truly excited about again. And people who are getting down about, it's a pretty complicated book, hard to get your head around. It's Adeptus Mechanicus. Everything they do is complicated. it's actually very thematic that it's hard to wield, maybe.
Oh, we didn't even get into all the detachment abilities like Knights of the Cog. Look, you got to tune in next week.
Oh, man. Yeah. I want Red here. Red needs to talk about this stuff. He'd love it.
Hopefully he can join us and Tanya too. But yeah, man, Adam, thanks for running down this initial part with me. And we'll be back next week.
Thanks for hanging in there with these guys. Appreciate it. Yeah, this book is amazing. Thank you very much, Paul, for having me on.
See y'all.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!